Hey everyone, this is Jerry Fabiano from KYGT, LPFM 102.7, 103.9, and coming at you here from the center of the universe, and that of course is Clear Creek County, Colorado. Do you agree, Joe?
Oh, definitely.
Oh,
no
okay.
Doubt about it.
All right. And that's the voice of our Congressman, Representative Joe Neguse. Joe, welcome.
Thank you, Jerry. It's great to be back.
All right. And you've got a year under your belt now, huh?
It's been a busy year. Yeah.
Well, and I'm looking. I did some research on you. And man, you've been hopping here. You know, you got over like 30 bills or something like that introduced. And you're on all these different committees, natural resources, judiciary.
That's right.
I seen you on like Chris Matthews and other programs. Those are just prep work. Now you're come up to the big one.
That's right. Oh, I always prep long and hard before I come onto your show, Jerry. Yeah. So I'm ready.
All right. So what's it been like just globally?
You know, it's been a very meaningful year. It's been a productive year. You and I have known each other a very long time. When I was running for Congress, I made very clear from the outset that I was going to work hard for the people of this district and that I thought that I had a broad set of experiences in the governor's cabinet as a regent representing Clear Creek for many years to be able to hit the ground running. And so we've tried really hard to do that out of the gate. And it's been a very busy 14 months, 15 months. Serving the people of this district. We've held 27 town halls up and down the district, Larimer County, and up here in the mountain communities, Boulder County. We've introduced 30 bills. As you said, it's the most of any freshman lawmaker in the United States, bills ranging from legislation to protect public lands, legislation to combat the existential threat of climate change, trying to reduce prescription drug prices, really introducing bills that we think will move the needle for the people of our state and the people of our country. We've been very busy, of course, as you mentioned, in terms of our committee work. I serve on three committees, the Judiciary Committee, the Natural Resources Committee, as well as the Select Committee on the Climate Crisis. And then also a number of subcommittees, Waters, Oceans, and Wildlife, important to Clear Creek, the Antitrust Subcommittee, Immigration as well. So a very busy committee portfolio since we took the majority in the House. And then finally, I also serve in leadership. I represent the freshman class at the leadership table with the Speaker of the House, Speaker Pelosi, and the Majority Leader, and so work every week to try to be a part of the conversations in terms of what the priorities really will be for the House Democratic Caucus. So there have been no shortage of issues to work on, and obviously at a very precarious time for our democracy, really wanting to make sure that we lean in and that we do everything we can to again, serve the people of this district, legislate wins where we can, but also be bold in terms of leading on some of the big issues that folks are concerned about.
Yeah, and I noticed that they don't seem like big, but like there was one about safe helicopters.
Yeah.
And that, that was a flight for life, apparently.
That's right. I mean, a very big deal for Colorado, very big deal for our district, and for Karen Mahaney, who's lives here up in the Central Mountains in Summit County. A terrible tragedy that happened several years ago, and her husband tragically lost his life in a helicopter crash, flight for life. Very brave pilot who had served our country. Just actually named a post office after him up in Summit County. We introduced a bill, as you said, called the Safe Helicopters Act, which would create a tax credit that would incentivize folks to essentially rebuild helicopters in a way that would be far more safe and would prevent these kind of accidents from happening for fuel-resistant systems. The bill, to me, is a good example of one, aspect of our service, me and my team, that's been a bit unique, which is, we knew early on, and again, maybe it's from having served this district for a long time as a regent before I got elected to Congress, that this is a special place. Clear Creek, as you said, center of the universe, second district, in my view, center of the universe, center of the state. And a lot of brilliant people, a lot of passionate people, engaged citizens who care about their community and their democracy. And so we wanted to be in a position to leverage their skill, their expertise, their ingenuity, to have them come up with ideas and have us be the vehicle to get those done in Washington. So the Safe Helicopters Bill is an example. Alley's Act, a bill that...
I wanted to ask you about that.
Wonderful bill, the idea of which we got from a 10-year-old girl who's a constituent of ours in Broomfield, who was born with a hearing condition essentially is unable to hear without a certain type of bone transmitting device, which is not covered by most major insurance carriers in the United States, health insurance carriers. So you can imagine, the children across our district and across the country who aren't able to live their dreams because the insurance companies won't pay for this critical device. So she wrote us a letter asking me and our office to do something about it, and we did. And we introduced a bill, bipartisan, so two Republicans, two Democrats on the bill. Mm-hmm. We're hoping it will move in the House. It would essentially add this device as a covered item under the Affordable Care Act. So again, another example of us kind of leading locally, of taking the best concepts and ideas and proposals that come from these wonderful constituents who I have the honor of representing in the 2nd Congressional and turning them into action. And that's, to be candid, one of my favorite parts of the job, notwithstanding all the polarization and the divisiveness in our politics, of actually being able to roll up our sleeves and work with our neighbors and constituents and community leaders to try to do some positive things.
Well, and that's what I think strikes me also, Joe, that when we're looking at this at the micro level, at the very human, okay, the flight, the helicopter, alley, very personal, but also the range of your expertise or bills or whatever I want to say is like with the CORE Act.
Yeah.
And you got that one through.
We did, through the House.
Yeah, and yeah, that's all part of the natural resources. That's so right. Talk about that a little bit. That's a big...
Another big deal. And again, although I like to take the credit, the truth is the credit rests with the many people in Idaho Springs and Clear Creek County and Summit County, Eagle County, across our state, Glenwood Springs, Garfield, who have been working on the public lands package that became the CORE Act for the better part of a decade. And the CORE Act is essentially an omnibus bill. It combines four different public lands pieces of legislation that have been introduced in the past to protect a combined 400,000 acres of public land across our state, designate Camp Hale, of course, I know you've been there, as a national historic landscape to honor the veterans of the 10th Mountain Division who fought for our country bravely during World War II and who then came back and built what is essentially the modern ski and snowboarding industry. So the bill we were very excited about, it was, again, a promise I made when I ran for Congress that I would, at that time, it was the Continental Divide and Wilderness Bill, which Congressman Polis had introduced previously, but that we would get that bill across the finish line in the House. And so we were able to do that last year in October. But it was the first major Colorado wilderness bill to pass the House of Representatives in a decade. So, we're now, of course, doing everything we can to help move it in the Senate, where it is, unfortunately, faces a much more difficult fate. But Senator Bennett, who's the lead sponsor that I've been working with for the last year, is pushing and is leading and is doing his best to get that bill, a hearing in the Energy and Commerce Committee in the, Natural Resources Committee in the Senate. So we're going to keep pushing.
And talk about the, because when we listen to like a number of the candidates running for presidency and so that label climate change as the one main existential threat, to humanity. I mean, to the earth here. So let's talk about that. You're positioned, you're on the committees in Congress on that. You got the CORE Act. That's kind of part of it there. Yeah. And when we talk about existential, what does that mean in layman's terms then? So when we say, this is big right here.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And I often talk about the threat of climate change as an existential one because I believe that to be the case. It is a threat to human life, right? To animal life. It is a planetary crisis that we all collectively have to address. I see it through the prism of being a young father. Last time I was here with you, my daughter was only 6 to 7 months old. She's, a year and a half now, walking and talking and gives me and my wife so much joy to be raising her in this wonderful state and this wonderful district. But we think a lot about the world that she's going to inherit. Mm-hmm. And the reality is if one reviews any number of the empirical studies that are out there, the IPCC report, which I'm sure your listeners have reviewed, the empirical data shows that we have a very short runway to avoid some of the most catastrophic consequences of climate change, that the planet we ultimately will be passing on to the next generation, my daughter's generation, and to the generation after hers, will be fundamentally different than the one that you and I inherited. So in my view, it requires us to be bold. It requires us to take action decisively and be willing to build broad coalitions to do it. I serve on the Select Committee, as I mentioned and as you noted. The committee, just for your listeners' benefit by way of background, there are 9 Democrats and 6 Republicans. So it's a special committee that was created at the beginning of this House, of this session of Congress under the Speaker's leadership. And I very much wanted to get on that committee. One of my top goals right after I was elected was to be placed on that committee. I'm the only member who serves representing not just Colorado, but the Rocky Mountain West.
Oh,
so wow. The ability to have that platform, yeah. both yeah. to talk about the visceral ways in which our communities are being impacted by climate change, wildfires, right, floods, mm-hmm. Some of the more historic floods that Boulder County and Larimer County experienced a few years ago. Also, to be able, you know, harkening back to something I said earlier, leveraging the skill and ingenuity and expertise of this district. I'm sure, as you know, 13 federal labs call the 2nd Congressional District home. Yep. NIST, NOAA, NCAR, CIRA mm-hmm. in Fort Collins, incredible scientists who are doing breathtaking work. And so wanting to make sure that they have a voice at the table as the Congressional Committee prepares its essentially report of recommendations that we will give both to the Congress, but also to the American people about what kind of action we need to take to decisively tackle the threat of climate change. It's been a very fascinating and meaningful experience for me serving on the committee. We've held, dozens of hearings, hearing from student climate activists to scientists to folks in the labor community to Greta, who, as you know, has galvanized not just our state, but really our country and the world around climate action. She testified in front of our committee several months ago. And one thing I'm very proud of is we were able to secure Colorado as the first and only field hearing of the committee. So, you know, as you know, most of the committee hearings that happen in Congress happen in Washington, D.C. After I got into the committee, I made a very salient, in my view, compelling case to the leadership to convince them to get out of Washington and go out and actually visit a state where we're trying to do as much as we can to move the ball forward on the renewable energy portfolio. And so we brought the committee to Colorado. I brought my Republican and Democratic colleagues so that they could visit with the scientists and the experts to hear from them about what we need to do as policymakers to get a handle on this problem. So the report will be out in a few weeks, and my hope is that it will incorporate a number of bills that we've introduced already in the Congress around climate action. By way of example, regenerative agriculture, right? Bills to try to scale up efforts to leverage, right, the carbon sequestration in our soils, which helps us address climate action, is also better for our environment and for our, our general human health, right?
Mm-hmm.
So just an example of the kind of bills that we've introduced, bills to modernize our federal labs so that the scientists have the necessary funding that they need on the research and development side to be able to create some new innovative technologies that will help us move away from fossil fuels. So a lot. Of course, we could spend the whole program talking about this subject. It's a passion of mine, and it's a passion of a lot of people that I represent.
And what is your sense? You talk about getting action done and the consensus, because we've lived through this extended period of denialism. Okay, you're working with colleagues across the aisle. Traditionally, the Republican Party has been the home of denialism. Is that starting to shift? Are you starting to see or feel or hear from people saying, that no, this is real?
A bit. I mean, there are some, some of my colleagues on the other side of the aisle who seem unlikely to abandon the denialism that has just taken hold in portions of their party. And I think a lot of that is, fossil fuel corporate based, right, and fueled, so to speak, pardon the pun. That being said, there are some members who we've been able to build relationships and partnerships with who recognize that this is a crisis and that we need to do something about it. And interestingly enough, those members happen to be, in my view, and I think they would say the same, from areas that are feeling the impacts of climate change in a very pronounced way.
So maybe around the coastal areas?
That's precisely right. So exactly. We introduced a bill not that long ago around risk mitigation, right? And so making sure that FEMA is prepared as we rebuild after disasters and so forth in advance of recognizing the threat of climate change. And so we've got a bill that's pending that we introduced with Congressman Rooney out of Florida, right, who represents a coastal community and who clearly recognizes that his constituents, irrespective of perhaps, some folks who may be still engaged in denialism, that this is a real problem that requires real solutions. So, I'm, as you know, an optimist. I've always been one. It's hard for me not to be in my upbringing and the incredible opportunities that I've had to represent this state. And so I am I'm not giving up yet, and we're going to keep working at it. Keep convincing folks.
And I want to tap into that optimism here, and I want to shift, and I know we just got a few minutes left here, but I want to talk about the other existential threat, and that's to our democracy. I've been focusing quite a bit of my programming on what I'm calling the repeal of democracy. As we start peeling it away here and here, and, you know, we interfere with voting rights, you know, by different peoples. Russian interference in our election, the news has come out, they're doing it again, not to anyone's big surprise, you know, sort of thing there. What is your sense on it? And, you know, that, again, I pose it as an existential threat to American democracy. And you're the optimist. I try to be, and I'm not giving up yet. You know, keep. What do you say to people when they ask you about this?
So, a couple things. I share your concern. I suspect that many of your listeners feel the same way. There are structural issues that have become far more noticeable in the last several years that I actually think have existed for quite some time, but nonetheless have become far more pernicious. And those structural issues merit congressional attention and action. To give you some example, money in politics, right?
Yeah.
The disastrous Citizens United decision a decade ago, which has unleashed a level of spending that many of us had warned about, of course, and many campaign finance experts had warned about long ago that this would happen. But the corrupting influence that it has on our politics, the gerrymandering that has become all too common in so many different states, the efforts to undermine bedrock voting rights laws like the Voting Rights Act of 1965, right, which is, as I said, bedrock, fundamental in terms of the protections that it has provided to folks wanting to exercise their franchise. There are structural issues now apparent in each of these different areas that I mentioned. And, you know, in the Congress, we're doing a lot, the House Democratic Caucus is doing a lot to try to address each of them. We actually, one of the first bills that we passed was a bill called H.R. 1, which you might be familiar with, which is a comprehensive bill that had some of the most forward-thinking modifications and improvements to our election system in a generation. It would get dark money out of our politics, would include some forms of public financing. It would restore the Voting Rights Act. We actually passed a separate bill on that subject, H.R. 4, a few months ago in the House. Also would essentially emulate many of the wonderful reforms that we adopted in Colorado that have made Colorado one of the best states for voter participation.
Mm-hmm.
All-mail ballots, automatic voter registration.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you know this, but this congressional district in particular had the highest tied for the highest voter participation rate in the United States in 2018. I joke around that I think it's because of the candidate, but the truth is, I don't think that's the case. I think it's a byproduct of our wonderful laws that we have on the books, where everyone who is legally entitled to vote is able to do so in an accessible way. So this is something that I think a lot about, that a lot of my colleagues think a lot about, and it is a top priority of ours in the Congress. Now, of course, all of this, you know, these structural issues that I've kind of articulated, you know, they all are becoming far more pronounced simultaneous to an administration that is undermining the rule of law in ways that I think many of us could not have fathomed, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the republic that we have, the freedoms, the opportunities that we have in the United States of America, which are sacrosanct, are freedoms and opportunities that we have to be willing to protect, right, and to work to preserve. And my fear, you see some of this happening at the Department of Justice in the last 2 weeks, post the impeachment trial, where we have fundamental tenets of the rule of law, norms that have guided the way in which prior administrations have functioned, and core tenets of separation of powers, by way of example, and the checks and balances that are built into our system with such brilliance by the founders. All of those, it seems to me, and I think it seems to a lot of people, day by day, are eroding. And they're eroding because this president clearly does not believe in them. And that should concern and should shock the conscience of every American and every one of your listeners.
Yeah, and just final thoughts on the upcoming election, okay? It looks like a real free-for-all, whatever, in the Democratic primary. But one of the also the range of candidates that I see as a strength there, but the level of participation. Iowa's was a little bit above 2016. New Hampshire really was, you know, taking off with it. And then the last statistics I saw in Nevada was that the early vote was already close to what it was in 2016. So I see this as a positive sign. Thoughts, reflections on the Democratic primary, where it's going, how's it going to shake down?
I think that you're right in terms of the turnout numbers. I'm optimistic that those are going to continue to increase as more states participate in the Democratic primary, and certainly the early results from in terms of the first states where folks have cast ballots or caucused suggest that there's at least an elevated turnout above 2016, which is a good sign. Look, at the end of the day, you know, primaries are all about giving every candidate an opportunity to present their vision for the future, right? I mean, elections, in my experience, and granted, I've not been at it that long, but they generally are all about the future and not about the past.
Right.
So it's an opportunity for every one of these folks to, the people who are running, all of whom are, you know, public servants, right, and who've served in different capacities, to make their case to the voters about why they think that their vision is the right vision forward, and to make the case as to why they believe that vision will ultimately resonate with the American people in sufficient numbers to have them be the next president of the United States after the November election. I haven't endorsed any candidates. I've had an opportunity to work with a lot of them, in particular the legislative candidates. So, you know, people like Senator Sanders, Senator Warren, and others. And I would just say I'm looking forward to voters making their, you know, voices heard, and then I hope all of us rallying around the nominee, because it's an all hands on deck moment for our democracy and certainly for the Democratic Party. So, well, we've got to do what we need to, you know, do to make sure that we're united around that common vision and beating the president this November. And as you said, the intervention and interference in our election is already happening. It's happening in real time. It has been, it has continued. And I worry a great deal about the efforts of, you know, foreign actors through disinformation, right, other tactics, sowing discord and disunity. And it would just encourage everyone to maintain a positive outlook. I mean, I get it. I understand that it's hard. I know folks are angry and upset about a lot of things this administration is doing. So am I. But I will tell you this. I was at yesterday, we've been back in district for a few days, and so been traveling everywhere in the district. I was in Granby a few days ago, Fraser, in Winter Park. And yesterday I was in Fort Collins for a citizenship ceremony, a naturalization ceremony that happens every year at an elementary school up there. And I got to tell you, seeing these fifth graders sing the national anthem and congratulate and greet these 40 new citizens from 14 different countries across the world, from Belarus and Nigeria and Cameroon and Mexico, and seeing the community and the way in which this diverse place of ours, right, this wonderful country, is able to unite to welcome these new citizens into our national family. To me, hard for me not to walk away with that, with hope about the future. So let's stay calm, let's keep focused, and let's do what we can to make sure that we win in November, so that that same spirit that I'm describing can take hold at the federal level in our national politics.
And we need to keep that attitude, that positive vision that you have here. We need to keep fostering, just like you're saying there. Okay, people want to get a hold of you and check out your website. Oh my God, I mean, there is a panoply, a gold mine there.
That's right.
Platinum.
Yes, very much so. They can go online. Yeah. You can go online to learn more about our legislative work at negus.house.gov. And you can also learn more about our campaign at Joe Negus for Congress.com.
Okay. All right, great. Well, thanks, Joe, for coming in.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Jerry,
yep.
Always.
Yep, and we'll do it again.
Definitely.
And I know you got to get running here, so, but any rate. Okay, this is Jerry Fabian, KYGT, LPFM, 102.7, 103.9, visiting here with Congressman Joe and the Goose. And real excited and very proud of all the work he's been doing here from the right here at the grassroots here, like you're talking about, Allie and the helicopter, all the way up to climate change, and it's just amazing. So, all right, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Now.